I believe in the good things coming, 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 coming. I believe in the good things coming, 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 coming. Out of darkness, light are pumping, 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 pumping. Into white light, all things running, 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 running.
And good morning. You're on with Waking with Oria. This is the last time I'll say good morning, because next time I'm on the air, it will be at 9 p.m. next Tuesday. Every Tuesday, 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. 2 hours. Hopefully I won't talk for 2 hours straight. The goal is to have more callers. That's why I'm changing the date and the time, to encourage more callers. And also to provide me a structure that is more welcoming and allowing for my natural energy to flow. What do I mean? Energy flows, right? Energy has its own life force. Life is energy. We are energy that comes from beyond our breathing, beyond our body. And that energy always goes from one place to the next. So as we begin the year of structure, because that is what we, all of us, doing the work together, and all of you in all of the countries around the world that are listening, I invite you to start embracing and welcoming and building and co-creating structures where it will give shape for your energy to flow naturally. When you begin, when you know that part of you that never changes, when you are familiar and intimate with that self, that part of you that's beyond the ego, that's beyond any identity, that never changes, you may create structures that allow it to freely flow. Because every session, every gathering that we do together, and any community ritual, that is, whether it's in a synagogue or a mosque or a ceremony in Peru, it brings you back to the flow. It brings you back to life's natural flow. Because when you are in flow, your health, your creativity, your relationships, your identity, it has an elegance, an effortlessness that is so important, that is so easy, that ultimately you remember who you are and you allow yourself to shine. So structures, creating structures, which are literally shapes that form the energy of your life. And me getting to know myself over the past 5 years doing this work, 10 years of exploring, 20 years of searching, 30 years of cultivating awareness, I've come to know myself. I've come to know what structures provide the flow that take me towards wholeness, that keep me in my job, that keep me in my role. So after these, what is it? I think this is the 25th podcast or 26th. I have no idea. But 25 podcasts later, I now know that my creative, inviting, welcoming energy flows better at night. I just do. I also know that my creative energy flows better when it is in communication, when it is serving, when it is in dialogue with you. So changing and creating structures that is really welcoming the natural flow of my life, so moving it from Thursday at 11 a.m. to Tuesday at 9 p.m. is one example of creating structure in order to allow my natural flow to be and shine and serve. So this year, really feel into what structures hold and shape your identity. What structures hold and shape your identity. And when we talk about identity, I'm not talking about one of the many masks, or if you're lucky, many egos that you're able to cultivate. And let's define an ego or mask as basically a facade that is used to relate in any given context. Because there are many different contexts in this world. There are many types of harmony. And in order for us to do our jobs, in order for us to live and to provide, we do develop different egos, different masks, different facades. As long that you know that part of you that never changes. As long that you are aware of that deep essence within you that doesn't change. Otherwise, the ego, the facade, the mask, not only it can be a lie, but even worse, you can depend on it. Because the one thing you don't want to do is believe that you have one ego, that there is one mask. Because when you identify with that ego and things change, as they always do, your worst fear becomes true. You feel or fear annihilation. And when the stories change and times are changing and your identity, your ego, your mask gets annihilated, you feel lost. And that's what midlife crisis is all about. It's that one story, that one mask, that one ego. When it goes away, we feel like we are in crisis. So luckily, that crisis is the invitation for more possibilities. Because what happens when your stories, when all of your stories break down? The real news is that there are many more possibilities now. So in community, what we are learning is to allow for the natural cycle of ego death. Ego death is very natural. Everything has a cycle. Every mask, every facade, every identity does have a cycle of life and death. And yet, the part of you that never changes gets stronger and gets more profound within you as you grow. We live in a culture that appreciates youth and adores being young. It doesn't yet appreciate wisdom and presence and the real power that comes when you cultivate and grow and nurture that part of you that never changes. And you may not be aware of it yet. That is why this is called waking. This is a process. You're waking up. It takes years, if not lifetimes. But things are happening fast now. So it does take years. And you need community support. The only way to really wake up is within community. Because we all have blind spots. We all fall down. That is what waking up is. It's meeting ourselves in places where otherwise we would be numb and hurt and retreating and disappearing. And then all of a sudden there are people around us. They say, hey, we see you. Stay with us. Stay together. And as you get more and more comfortable with the idea that you are not pure. You are not perfect. You do not have to be one person, one ego, one identity. As you get comfortable with all of you, all of your shadows, all of your sides, all of your magnificent gifts and ugly parts, you realize that that is waking up. Embracing, accepting, feeling whole, and definitely not attaching yourself to ideas of purity, not attaching yourself to one identity, not even attaching yourself to this idea that you're supposed to kill your ego and just be pure. No. This is a multiple reality universe. There are many, many realms to reality making. There isn't just one matrix. There are different levels of awareness. And yes, there is a level, and I'm using quotes under the table, of awareness that you realize that there are no levels. And there is just this plain, magnificent nothing, that nothing of possibilities where everything arises out of. But as you go in and out of that nothing awareness, you, as being alive on this planet right now, you do have to cultivate and nurture different identities, different masks, different egos. And that's the beauty of being alive. That's the beauty of doing our work together. Because there is one purpose for doing our work together. It's giving you access to identity-making tools. It's giving you access to resources where you know how to create and maintain multiple masks, multiple egos that all are true and in alignment with that part of you that never changes. The self, the true self that is the principle of life, that is the principle of our dance together. Just like you have a fingerprint, you have a soul print, you have this unique essence that shines through you when you learn to just be, when you take care of yourself, when you have the space, when you are nourished, when you allow for flow again. That's why self-care is so important. Because when you're back in your body, when you are nourished, when you know how to handle your contradictions, not get rid of them, navigate your contradictions, navigate your doubts, navigate the ugly parts in you, not get rid of them. That's when the self, that part of you that doesn't change, can become more and more and more exuberant, seen, known. And because this is a part of you that never had a chance to come out before, I invite you to not even think or imagine that you know what it will look like. It's more about giving it space to grow, giving it space to bloom, giving it space to flower. And then you will fall in love with that part of you that never changes. You will fall in love with all of your dancing shadows and egos and masks, and you will not fight them. You will embrace them. You will not try to be this pure, perfect, good, human being. You'll just know that you're being led and guided by life's intelligence. You're allowing life to flow through you and to shape you. So what shapes your energy, what shapes your imagination, what shapes your personality? Giving that room, making and creating structures for that part of you that never changes so it can flow more easily. That's our work this coming year. And that is what we are going to talk about with Peter and Al when we come back.
In the moon of the budding trees, I was gifted new eyes to see all of the shifting shape and ways you can be. Wake the dreams into realities. Wake the dreams into realities. Sunset diamonds trickle down our cheeks. The language of no words is how we speak. Part your mama's been in fire.
Listening to Al. It's so good to have you in the studio, Al. It's so good to feel that frequency of your playing. I'm excited about working together with you to create some walking meditations. It's always a pleasure to be in your presence. And we are talking about how structure is at the core of creation. Structure is at the core of creation, and giving shape to our frequency, allowing for our frequency to be shaped. Because let's admit it, we are nothing but a frequency. We are nothing but an energetic frequency. And that frequency shapes our bodies. That frequency shapes our faces. It shapes who we are. So we are inviting a year-long process where we are learning how to generate and create and allow for sets of relationships and shapes that meet and create these structures for these frequencies and energies to flow without all the effort, without having to come back and fix and correct, because it is true to the part of us that never changes. Al, when did you start playing guitar?
When I was 16, I think it was. I started playing the piano for a long time, and then I think I heard Stairway to Heaven for the first time, and music as such, classic rock and roll, from my brother, who was a hippie, who was at Woodstock, and much older than I. And I fell in love with Hendrix and Zeppelin and Pink Floyd, and that music really spoke to me through my brother, who took me to New York City from my home in Massachusetts to let my hair down a lot from my oppressive home. I got to look at girls while they walked by in the streets with my brother. And I started playing guitar when I was 16 years old, and taught myself for the first year. And then I got a teacher, and I took off from there.
That's great.
Yeah.
When you play, is that a container for your energy to flow freely? Is that a structure that allows for your creativity? Like, what does playing to you feel like?
I'm really glad you've asked that question, because just now I'm realizing how nourishing it is for me just even to be in this place. Previously, there was such a level of disapproval constantly on my playing and any creative expression that I would exhibit. There was a feeling of like, it must sound this way, therefore it's good. And that was like completely invalidating everything that really wanted to come out. Could have been a note, could have been a chord, could have been a rhythm. And if it didn't sound like this particular, some image that I had in my head, or some musical image that I had, well, then it was disapproved of. So now, as I'm quote unquote waking up, part of the practice is whatever comes out, if it's approved of and accepted by me, well, then it's music, and then it's you can lay it down, and there's something there. There's inspiration there. There's music there. There's actually a song there. There's me there. But really, it's taking that, removing that disapprovement and that quote unquote, it should sound a certain way for it to be good and lovable and likable. And as I was saying on Monday night, how nourishing it is for me to be just in this environment. Like, I just, as I was playing for that 30 seconds or whatever it was, the rushes of heat that I was getting as my body's going, thank you, tap in, drop into this presence. It's safe to be present here while you're playing. Peter's next to me listening. Aurea, you're connecting with me. Sam is here looking. It's all happening, and it's nourishing to me. So to answer your question about playing, that's what it's doing for me even right now. You know, like, just this whole environment is like feeding me.
Right.
You know, so.
So we're talking about structures. That's why.
That's one.
Yeah. And creating structures for energy to flow freely. That is why I am exploring the venture with you and creating these walking meditations for people, where the combination of a little bit of guidance from my part and part of voice and words, in combination with your playing, but give people a structure to drop in and to have a real date with themselves. Because if there's one thing I know that someone asked me a week ago, what is the one thing that people couldn't do to improve their life? And I said, well, have a better relationship with themselves. And he said, well, yeah, but what can they do for that?
To do that.
And I said, well, take a walk. Be with yourself. That's it. I mean, some people call it meditation. Some people call it a holosync. Some people have it as yoga. Some people have it in ecstatic dancing. Some people, you know, whatever it is. But to actually, for me, to be very honest about it and say that whatever work you are doing on yourself, in yourself, about yourself, to take the space and the time, if you can, every day, because once you do it, you won't be able to stop, to be with yourself. And I can go based on what has been helpful for me. And for me, it always started with a walk. And yes, maybe I'll walk to the park and sit down on a bench for a half hour. Maybe I'll just walk in between the buildings and get lost in the sound of cab drivers. Maybe I'll go to the steam room and sit quietly. Whatever it may be, it's always about me spending 20 to 40 minutes by myself and checking in and allowing myself to just be. So starting this project of structure, creating more consistent structure for an invitation for people to be able to put on their iPhone, which is always in their pocket, and press play once a day where they're being guided and led and invited for a walking meditation. Again, starting the year of structure, this is why I'm excited about doing such projects with you and other community members. So thank you for that. What are your thoughts, Mr. Peter?
Thank you. When you do your practice, 20 to 40 minutes, maybe at a church somewhere, maybe in the steam room, maybe walking, can you elucidate for us a bit?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Elucidate?
Uh-huh. Loose. Light is in there, so I'll let you take the rest
okay,
of it.
Okay, I like it.
Enlighten us a little.
Sounds
talk
like
about
a seduction
your
with light.
Well, all right. And Lucy. I would like to hear, and as always, you're going to take it where you're going to take it. I would like to hear from you how you experienced the difference from, say, the time, the 2 hours, whatever you're doing in life before you take this sacred time, this time with yourself. Once you take it, how are your thoughts different? Are they slower? Do you have to work on yourself to get to a place of centeredness and presence? Can you talk about, and I'm sure it changes from day to day, but as specific as you can be, how does that work for you? You don't just drop in easily all the time, right? How does it work? Give us some.
Sure. You know, I want to, from that, I love that question, that transition. How do you get to the point where you choose, you say, this is what I need right now, from here I am in chaos and I choose to walk to get myself back.
So, okay. Yeah. I'll answer all of it in the 3 minutes we have just on this segment. So your question, how do you choose, is interesting because you're saying we may have a great product out there, you know, a great invitation for people, but how do you even get to choose to take that walk and to listen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Peter is saying, what the hell are you doing anyway? Well, what's happening within that walk for you? Give us a little bit of, it's almost the same question, really, but in different form. Well, how do you choose it basically comes down to a practice that I already know works for me. So because I have so much experience with the fact that after I go on a walk, it's not even after, at some point during my walk, at some point when I do it right, because sometimes I don't do it right, meaning doing it right is really not trying to figure out anything. is not giving myself homework and not looking to get anything specific, but just, I like the word sacred time, making time sacred, making the next 20 or 40 minutes sacred, inviting time itself to teach me, inviting the next 40 minutes to guide me. There is a moment that everything drops and all of my truths are being reflected back to me. There are, it's a very familiar moment. It's the moment that I go for. It's the moment that keeps me doing it. It's the reason why it has become such a sacred practice for me. And it took me a long time to stop trying to do it the way other people do it, to stop trying to take on meditation, to stop trying to take on gratitude practice, to stop trying to take, and to just invent new one that works for me. And I'm being encouraged by my own self that doesn't change to share it from a place of invitation, because knowing that making time sacred, literally proclaiming the next 40 minutes of my life sacred, where I am surrendering to life's intelligence. I'm literally saying, there is so much happening, there is so much going on. I am handling, 2 million bits per second, but I'm only able to interpret 40 or whatever the number is. So I'm just going to surrender to that fact.
So it sounds like you step back, almost a sacred passivity. You do not have an expectation. You do not have an agenda. You do not have a to-do list. In fact, it's perhaps the opposite of all of those.
You let go of figuring out.
You receive. You create space to be and let things drop.
Right.
And because you have cultivated a practice, you build, it's almost like a skill, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that you can rely on getting to that place where those truths present themselves.
I will elaborate on that when we come back.
And we don't know where to begin. Don't know how to fit in. Caught in between the lines. Fighting this world from inside. Can't go back. We're on a one-way track. It's been a million miles gone. Is it taking us to where we belong?
So that song, sometimes that's how my thoughts feel when I want to enter some sacred space. And see, I'm imagining you in your practice. I'm imagining that it's easy for you, and that's probably not fair. For me, when I purposely try to create that space, I think a lot of the times, the first level, I become more aware of my thoughts, and it's almost like I'm giving them a chance to be heard, so they ratchet up their they ratchet up their presence, and they want to, they speed up, and it's, whoa. But what is helping me this morning, and we talked about this yesterday, you did, is this cultivation of an awareness of and a relationship with that part of us that doesn't change. The thoughts, to not fight the thoughts, and know that underneath and on top and through is this place that doesn't change.
So, okay.
To be attached to that idea, even if I don't feel it at that moment.
6 years ago, that part of me that doesn't change, when I would give myself that space and that room to do nothing, that part of me that doesn't change would feel like an anxiety attack. Okay. It was not fun. It was not easy in any way, shape, or form to sit down and do nothing. And it's a story of mine that I would go to the beach every day after work, a work that I didn't enjoy, a relationship that was just a repeat of all of my other relationships. And I was in a new place, a new job, a new home, a new part of the country where I thought I would be able to reinvent myself. And yet I found myself back in the same situation, but even worse, mm-hmm. because I thought that changing my place, changing my job, changing my friends, changing my girlfriends would actually give me the opportunity to create a new life. And I found myself in the same hole, but a lot worse, because there was a sense of self-betrayal. There was a sense of, I do not trust myself anymore because I don't know what to do. So when I would go every day and sit down, I take a beach chair and just force myself to sit down. When I say force myself, it was literally force myself. I would make sure to not get up until my timer would beep because it felt like hell. It doesn't matter that it was the sunset. Really, it helped. It helped. I know what kind of structures helped me, maybe. And the beach was one of them. But it felt like hell. You know, because emotions and feelings and thoughts come up. And when you're just observant and you're just letting them flow, they literally shape your body. They shape your thoughts. They shape your energetic existence. And I would either find myself pacing back to the car, wanting to go and eat something, smoke something, do something, just get me out of here. Or I would find myself hopefully crying, like releasing, just feeling hopeless and helpless and, you know, acknowledging that I'm afraid that I'm a loser. Yes. I'm afraid that this, I'm, you know, nothing. And my impurities and the wrongdoings that I've done will haunt me forever. Yes. And believe it or not, only then, only when I have acknowledged these places, not I acknowledge them, when it's just, that's what would keep coming up. The relief would start sneaking in there slowly.
Mm.
This sense of, oh my God. What have I been going through unconsciously for years? I was 29 years old when these epiphanies would come to me. Not in the first 10 minutes and not even in the first 40 minutes. I remember going there at 5 o'clock after work, or I would skip out a little earlier, 4:30, and I wouldn't be back home until 8 o'clock. So sometimes I would be on my knees, like, crying and praying and just literally asking for something, because I did not want to repeat the same patterns again and again, but I was. So I got a little emotional. I'm not sure what your question was.
It's a good answer.
Okay, great. those thoughts, you know, those mm-hmm. places, the beginning, it is challenging to just realize that you are a narcissist, that you keep thinking about yourself, that it's all about you, that you are consistently trying to explain yourself in your head to yourself and to other people. It's the most tiring thing you could do, and yet that's what 99% of the world, maybe hopefully 70% of the world now, is doing. Just completely answering back again and again and again and planning and replanning. So much of my work right now is triggering people to a place where they make such a big deal out of things. And all I'm doing is hoping and providing the structure where they can realize you're making a big deal out of nothing. You've been doing this for 40 freaking years, okay? It's important to pay attention that, yes, you may get hurt here and there, and some people look like assholes. But you know what? You are the one who are keep thinking about it and thinking about it and explaining yourself and explaining yourself. And that comes through these sacred times. That comes clear when you are present to your own discussions with yourself. That becomes clear. And I am not saying something that other people haven't said before. That's what meditation practice is supposed to be about. That's what a lot of these repatterning programs are doing. But I'm just advising a simpler way. It's not a method. It's not a system. It's just you proclaiming, claiming 20, 40 minutes of your day as sacred, as a sanctuary for your mind, for your heart, for your body.
You've said before that coming to that, understanding that a lot of what you, and this came to you from this beach practice, the Santa Monica beach practice, that was about realizing all this self-explaining that you were doing, justifying yourself to yourself and to others, which seems to me like a form of protection. A form of protection. That's protection.
A form of, I don't feel good enough. I don't feel I can just be myself. I don't feel like I can just go on without always explaining myself. Mm-hmm. Now, because I wasn't aware of the part of me that doesn't change, mm-hmm. I wasn't really tied. I didn't have that intimate connection with who I am. Then I kept trying to maintain facades, mm-hmm. thinking that they are lies, thinking that I just have to do it in order to survive.
To do what in order to survive?
Maintain
have
facades.
Maintain them. Keep
have those masks up.
Yeah.
Right. Meanwhile, you were actually in that practice cultivating this sense of the self that does not change. You're giving it space to become present day to day in a day to day way where you didn't have to explain.
Correct.
When these two things are happening at the same time.
When I saw, you start to experience these patterns. I started seeing that 99% of my CPU cycles are being wasted. Forget wasted. They're being busy explaining myself to myself and to other people. Literally meaning I was never here. I'm always protecting myself against some upcoming somebody saying, hey, what are you doing? And the other thing that kept creeping in there, which I know is happening to all of you, or anyone that is creating some sacred time, compassion and tolerance for yourself starts to bubble up. Because when you realize how sacred and special you are, just because you are literally helpless to your patterns, your unconscious life, your unconscious mind is so much more responsible to than you know your day-to-day decisions, that it behooves us to just get to know ourselves. It behooves you to see what life is trying to do through you. So cultivating this place of forgiveness and compassion for myself really paved the way for the part of me that never changes to come through. The part of me that has just been trying to come out since I'm 7 years old to really be magnified.
That's great. That is so helpful. There's some how-to in that. I'm always trying to get him to the how-to. You're bursting over there.
Practical application.
You got about 90 seconds.
No, what I'm hearing is to bring it back to the original, the first 15 minutes of the podcast, the paradox of I see these are masks and we learn in the spiritual world that I am not my masks, right? But at the same time, we must embrace and acknowledge that we are our masks. We are our ego. We are these things. And there's the compassion. There's the no longer making wrong of what we're using to function in the world, which is mask A, B, C, all the way to Z. You know, to embrace the mask, to embrace the false identity. Let's not even call it false identity. It's something that we have the option to create as an identity for ourselves.
And then what? We accept it and then?
Well, here's the thing. What I believe is that with the acceptance / approval, it kind of dissolves or it becomes more of something that we can use versus something that is taking over us and something that is, that's, and as he said before, why would we fear annihilation when we have, when we're the ones that are kind of manipulating and playing with and having a dance with a mask that we decide to create? Versus one that we're using for protection, as you said, Peter, or survival, right? So the paradox is, I know a mask isn't the thing that never changes in me or the thing that isn't me, but I will accept it as it is. I will accept it as me so I can now be in charge of it. Right. I can use it with me.
And
versus
compassion for the need to have it.
All
it's
of it.
It's a tool.
Absolutely.
You know, you're welcome here. With all your
that's
fears
right,
and your
right.
faith.
Oh, you want to protect yourself? Oh, you don't feel good enough? Oh, come on over.
Ooh, I didn't like that. Was a little rough. Actually. We ought to take a break.
So tap me out and tap me into you. Heal my brain and my body too. Balance my chemistry, hydrate these cells, cause the body talks and meditation helps. The body talks and meditation helps. Oh, oh, oh.
So yeah, having compassion for masks. I think it'd be fun one day, and I think other people do this out there, and they actually celebrate their masks, and they find things to wear, and they have spiritual get-ups and actual physical get-ups. And
my masks don't need any more encouragement than they're already getting, but you do your thing.
Yeah, well, you know, yeah.
Halloween.
I think it's fun to I think it'd be fun to acknowledge the masks and that, and kind of remove the shadow from them and remove that as some people would say, slime or neediness.
Oh, gosh.
You know, because they're just trying to get what everything in this world is trying to get, you know, acceptance, love, approval, etc. So Oria, what do you like, what can you tell us about a mask that you originally were shaming, making wrong, and now somewhat celebrate or accept?
How about I'll tell you about the part of me that never changes. And we'll go from there.
Okay.
I mean, there's many examples. I go into the steam room and I sit down. It's my time. It's quiet. I'm not there to help anyone. I'm not wearing a mask. I'm literally naked. And this guy, who's very nice, I've seen him there for a while. He's very sweet. Doesn't drain. Doesn't, you know, when he talks, it's great. Nothing, you know, I'm not avoiding them. He says to me, I did something stupid and it's really bothering me. And I say to him, well, that's stupid already because it's bothering you. And he said, oh, I'm not even going to tell you what it is. You just fixed me. That's the part of me that never changes. The part of me that jumps naturally towards supporting and helping and inspiring, not trying, not hoping to get acknowledgement, not getting some, you know, any joy out of it. But I find myself a lot when I give myself space. Walked by the other day and I saw a traffic cop and a, you know, pedestrian or whatever fighting. And I just walked by and I said, it's almost spring. And, you know, they're just relaxed. It's very simple, but that's that part of me that never changes. That's the part of me that I shine. Yeah. I shine, but in reflection. So creating different masks in order to fit into different contexts for the part of me that doesn't change to flow. Here on this podcast, I have a mask. I do. It's one mask to fit anyone that's listening anywhere around the world. When we are behind closed doors in our gatherings, I have another mask. It's not fake. It's just another mask to fit into that context. When we are going to do our meditation recordings, it's another mask. Again, I'm calling it a mask just from a place of relating to that context, to continue to do my job, to continue to show up, to continue to allow that part of me that never changes, but in different contexts.
Right, right.
So masks are really structures to fit in to a given context. It's silly to think. Again, people don't have to do that. It's about creativity. It's about fun. It's fun for me to fit into different contexts and do the job in me that doesn't change. But for me to think that I'm just going to be this one person, and if people like it, great. If they don't, that's fine. That works. But there's a part of me that's not afraid of trying on different egos, trying on different masks, because I think that's the most beautiful creative endeavor that we have in this society. There are 7 billion people. No, I do not want to talk to all 7 billion people, but I want to encourage and inspire more than 10. It's just part of who I am. So creating and doing and juggling and jumping and changing, always honoring that part of me that doesn't change. So not finding shame or not finding, like not making any of my masks wrong, only was possible once I acknowledged that part of me that doesn't change. It's very simple. Only when I acknowledge that I am, this is my essence. This is who I am. And you know what? It's in my name. We all have it.
Oh, yeah.
It's in my name. It's in my nature. A friend of mine always gives me the advice that his father gave him. Don't overlook the obvious. That's what we are here to help and create supporting structures for other people for, to just let go. To see and to acknowledge that part of them that doesn't change. And that shows up usually after you're compassionate, after you're more tolerant, after you are willing to be quiet, after you're willing to stop talking in your head and outside long enough to see that what you want to say is actually your creation. It's your expression. It's your mask, but from a place of service and not neediness or validation or just this idea that you need to be relevant. And that does take time and community and compassion.
Speaking from a place of being aware before we speak, and so it's coming from a place of service as opposed to neediness or grasping or validation or needing to be relevant.
I will share this story
repeating.
In the last 3 minutes. For years, I would find myself, when I would go into training with my teacher, I would find this urge to speak anytime, not anytime, but when he would ask a question that I felt like I have an answer for, I would really want to say it. I would want to express myself. And for years, anytime I spoke up, not only I didn't feel acknowledged, I literally felt like he would run me over. He would cut me off in my words, and not only cut me off, sometimes say what I was just about to say. And it would bewilder me. I don't know if that's the word.
That's right.
I wouldn't understand. It would trigger me to these places where I would really feel like, maybe I'm just a pain in the ass here. Maybe if I just disappeared from this whole group altogether, nobody would care. It's fine. Maybe I'm really irrelevant here, and I'm just fighting for something that, you know, it's not really for me. For years, I felt this way, every time, every class. And it's only over the past year when I acknowledged that I am depending on his validation. I am depending on his acknowledgement. And what he has been trying to do with me, and he has done a very good job at it, is telling me, you do not need my validation. You do not need to be relevant by speaking up in the class. As a matter of fact, your job is to shut the F up and do your real work. You do not need my validation. You do not need to trigger other people in thinking that you know more than them or somehow we have a disconnection where we understand each other. Do it, but not with words. Do it for real. And it took me...
So familiar.
And you know how... Exactly. You know how I figured it out? It's only when I finally feel relevant in my work, and I actually do not require the same validation and acknowledgement because I actually have it inside myself, I still found myself wanting to speak. I still found myself like this impetus to be relevant. And that's when I realized, wow, I want to be relevant even though I know I am. Oh, thank you so very much for ignoring me or running me over for 4 years. Thank you so very much for having the wisdom and to know how to teach me. And it was by ignoring me and supporting me when where it counts, not where I wanted to be validated. So watching those tendencies within myself, and again, how am I able to do that? It's years and hundreds, if not it's definitely thousands of hours of just paying attention to the ebb and flow inside myself, paying attention to the love, hate relationships that I have within myself and what that forms.
Next week,
Tuesday,
sooner than soon,
9 p.m. to 11 p.m.